Well, hello, everybody. Here's my book, Flash Cuts Out of Chaos. It's a steal for $19. And I just want to say that my word is my bond. Anyway, that was for you, Michael. I thought I'd start out with the first poem I ever published, actually. It's called The Game. It's about baseball, obviously. The Game, 21 years of Ariel beam from under a baseball cap. We're going to the game tonight, he says. The Portland Beavers versus the Tacoma Rainiers. He knows that I'll love it and apologizes to his mother, who thinks baseball should last as long as it takes to eat a foot long and fries. $5 a piece that night to sit behind home plate. It turns out that the difference between AAA baseball and the major leagues is $25 a seat. The scoreboard is hand operated. No hits, no runs, and a bald head where the error should be. It's haircut night. 10 barbers stationed in PGE Park give fans their choice of haircuts. A radio announcer sits in the 20th row, swinging his arms over his head, doing a Harry Carey imitation during the seventh inning stretch. Arms around each other, Ari and I sing, "Take me out to the ball game." "I love you, Dad," he says. I kiss his cheek, laugh out loud, slap him on the back. I really don't care if I ever get back. Thank you. Some of you know that I had a rousing Catholic education in Cheyenne, Wyoming, dominated by the Dominican nuns, who were mostly, well, frankly, stupid and mean, but they were great muses. And so this is a poem, my first poetry teacher. If she liked you, Sister Humbert would pull out her pen and draw a red check mark on your cheek, grab that cheek between thumb and forefinger, and shake it back and forth until you screamed. When you angered her, she'd wrap 15 decades of rosary around your throat and tug or cold cock you, as she did Ronnie Davis one frigid Cheyenne morning when he pushed through a crowd of girls to get into our classroom and its promised warmth. She knocked Ronnie on his ass with a hard right to the nose. People crossed themselves while Ronnie rose up like some sixth grade god and landed one to her gut. She fell like a huge cottonwood strewn with Halloween toilet tissue. The clangor of her rosary beads when she hit the tile made Hector's fallen armor sound silent and inglorious. She made us memorize poems that year. Mine was Longfellow's Excelsior. Some young alpine buck climbed a mountain pass, even though a wise old peasant warned him not to, and a maiden offered him her breasts for a pillow, an image that electrified my 11-year-old mind. People crossed themselves, but they found him dead in the snow the next day, there in the twilight, cold and gray. Lifeless but beautiful he lay, was Longfellow's description, which also described Sister Humbert's Dominican habit with its black grotto hood and white scapular and Ronnie's face as she led him away from us forever. Thank you. Some of you also may know that Judy and I, my wife and I, have a place up in Michigan that we just love to go to, and it's on Townsend Road on Walloon Lake, which is the lake that Hemingway actually grew up on. And this poem is called Walking Townsend Road, Petoskey, Michigan. One day, it's the red-twigged dogwoods ringed by ragweed yellows and chicory blues that clarify mind and confirm insignificance. Another day, it's the garter snake whose crushed head reassures and saddens, the long green body pocked with purple checks stretched out on the southbound lane. The sheen of life still coats its skin, its breath now of the expired world where there is only awe. Today, like Buddhas at sunset, three sandhill cranes stand on Billiou's farm facing west, enacting contrariness. Rusty feathers hug their shoulders like prayer robes as maples and ashes ablaze in crimson and orange conduct cornstalk symphonies in the dying autumn sun. Against sunset's gleam, it's hard to tell at first whether those cranes are deer or birds or monks. Their hunched silhouettes mark the force of sun over meadow, breeze over grass, a tyranny of calm in this bloody, battle-fed world. Thank you. There's another poem about up there. It's called Fall Up North. Everything dying up here is so alive. We walk through a maple leaf blast, the deep red explosion coating us in color, anointing our entry into gamboge, birch, and aspen, leaves lit as if from within. No wonder our dog, Muggsy, thinks they're as energized and happy as her tail. Our neighbor, Jim, on this morning walk with us, points to a patch of myrtle he's planted that will creep if we live long enough towards our property. Judy sits on a step at the public access park and for the trillionth time is flummoxed by the sunbeads bouncing across Walloon Lake, its blue liquid canvas conducting a daytime light show. On the way back, Judy wants to turn right when I know we should turn left. Jim knows it too. And we watch as Judy finally reads the road sign and sighs and says, "We should turn left." Never undone, she decides that Jim is right, while I am wrong. That's 40 years of marriage and a song. Hungry at walk's end, we decide on lunch at the Odawa Casino. They once owned all we saw. Their leaves a bed for spring trillium, their eyes the hues of autumn, identical to the land we love. Now their ears, the mind-numbing clang of slot machines, their eyes every color not known to nature. We get the senior buffet special, all you can eat for $7 a piece. They've done a fine job with the casino. The food is spectacular. Judy and Jim eat the fish while I enjoy a steaming bowl of bean and ham soup. Muggsy waits asleep in the car. She dreams of leaves that fly away from her like the moths and butterflies she loves to chase. I dream that we four will take this walk again, this flash cut out of chaos, this path of right turns. Thank you. Well, here's one I just wrote, and you'll get the reference. It's called Moving Day. There's a bit of a play on moving. Moving Day. It was a big white truck, a huge version of a miniature one I played with as a child. Moving Day to the Tinker Toy Village. Were my favorite toys packed along our pretend sofa, pretend beds? The bowls my mom used to make pancakes on Sunday, my Jerry Mahoney dummy, vehicle of my never-to-be-realized life of the party career as a ventriloquist, and my secret Dick Tracy special two-way radio wristwatch that stopped crime before it happened. All packed now, ready to go. I steered the little truck through traffic along the strips of carpet in our living room, honked at tiny British double-decker buses, maneuvered around tiny tanks, tiny sedans, even a plastic bloke riding a motorcycle. Little army men doubled as pretend movers who helped unload at our destination. two decorative pillows piled on top of one another that became our new home. Oh, the hope that lived there. This is what I remembered as I watched that white truck in Nice begin its death drive, a cozy memory conjured to avoid the chthonic catastrophe caused by someone's disturbed child, some brute trying to bully his way into heaven. A child's doll leaned against a body bag bundled in the street. Thank you.